Across Divides is a podcast that discusses challenges faced by communities around the island of Ireland. In this season, we're taking a deep dive into Carlingford Lough and the Shifting Tides Project, connecting coastal communities between the shores of Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. We speak with scientists, artists, and communities about the different ways they understand the sea, exploring creative approaches to protect it. Learn more at theshiftingtides.org. There is something incredible about the fact that we will never truly understand what goes on beneath the sea, but there is a magic in knowing that entire worlds exist there beyond our comprehension. The sea is often interpreted in terms of its colours, the reds and browns of seaweed, the yellows and orange of sea stars, the deep blue-green darkness of the water itself. We are a highly visual creature, but many of the undersea beings interpret their world differently. In this episode of Across Divides, we meet with composer Karen Power as she explores the underwater soundscapes of Carlingford Lough.
I guess I'm a classically trained composer. That's my original background. But for me, I've never heard the difference between what most of us call music and all other sound. So sounds that happen all around us in our environments. So I'm very interested in listening. So this is something that I've been developing as part of my practice for a very long time. And this goes hand in hand with the notion of why we categorize some things that we listen to as music, and then why we categorize other things that we listen to as noise or as something to ignore. I guess part of the interest is also philosophical, in that this idea that a lot of the kinds of music and sounds that I choose to work with are ones that we as humans have kind of been forced to neglect in order to survive, right? Particularly in today's society. So we get up, we go to work, we dismiss the sound of traffic because we need to focus. We're kind of always going and leading towards a particular definition of what we're going to listen to and what we're going to allow in. And this interests me because this very much affects how we listen to music. So like most people I know choose a time when they're going to listen to music, and then that's what they're doing. So then it becomes an activity, maybe a pleasurable moment. And then my question becomes, well, what are we doing all the rest of the time? You know, our ears don't shut off. So we are consciously shutting them off.
Karen describes herself as a sound seeker, listening to places to understand how ecosystems work together, how they interact over various timescales, asking what happens when layers of sound are removed. She spends her time in remote environments, deserts, oceans, rainforests, polar regions, places where she can still hear sounds with as little disruption from human activity as she can find. Sound travels four times as fast in water as it does in air. Many of the creaturely inhabitants of the undersea communicate across the sound waves. Whales and dolphins are well known for their songs, but many other animals call and whoop and click with one another to signal or speak or echolocate. This is all within an environment that also rattles and stirs as water washes over sand and bubbles through rocks and rolls against itself. The sea is a maelstrom of noise. There is also human noise, the sound of ships and drills, and machinery that shakes the sea and grates through it. Human noise drowns out the sounds that marine animals need to sense their surroundings and each other. It has become a pervasive and destructive force. In her work, Karen is careful not to make assumptions about her place in relation to the sounds that she is recording. She is there to listen.
If you're not aware of what's around you, then you don't know what you're destroying when you take something away from it. And I think you know, as humans, we assume that we have the right to interfere and to take something and to own something for our own purposes. And I will admit that when I first started listening, it was about me. It was about, oh, wow, it's an amazing to listen to these environments and feel part of them and feel connected. But I will also say that the more I listen, the more I realize that that is an assumed right on my behalf. And that actually, over the last number of years, my aim has been to listen in a way that's as unintrusive as possible and to not have an agenda while I listen. So I've been training myself as to how to let the space guide my listening rather than me guiding the space. And so a lot of what I do now is spend that time putting my ears in that position and my equipment in that position so that I genuinely feel that I've left room for the space to speak and that what I'm doing then is capturing what it's saying as opposed to trying to guide it to what I want to say. And of course, that's more challenging, but it's also, it's right. It's the way we should behave with any environment, I think. I would say that my work has moved away from the idea of the composer sitting alone in one's room, coming up with ideas, writing them all down, and then handing them over to the performer, and more about a composer being in a living environment, letting the environment inform what kind of a piece is going to emerge from that, and then finding the best possible ways of communicating that in a sort of collaborative way between me, musicians, listeners, audience, whoever we want to call them. So that's certainly changed over the years for the better, I would think.
In the summer of 2024, Karen visited Carlingford Loch. Wherever she could get access to the loch, she would record. She uses a hydrophone, a small microphone that hangs from a cable on the end of a metal rod. The cable is plugged into a recording device, and Karen hears the underwater sounds in real time. Watching her work, you can see that all her focus is towards the sound coming up from the bottom of the sea.
When you make a field recording, you're just capturing a moment in time of a living environment. You can be lucky, you can be unlucky, you can get something, you can miss something. It's all very open as to what happens in that period of time. I wanted to create as many opportunities to feel like I had listened to as many positions around the loch and inside the loch where I felt, okay, I've done a pretty good survey of what can be here. This is, of course, allowing for the fact that it's living, it's alive, so nothing stays still. A sound that I might have heard in Warren Point on day one, for all I know, could be over the other side of the border on day three. And perhaps I'll pick it up on the other side. You know, just there's all kinds of playfulness that can come into the process once you realize that what you're dealing with is another life form.
The first recordings Karen made in Carlingford Loch were on the shore. She dangled her hydrophone from piers and rocky outcrops and beaches covered with mussel shells. To get out into the middle of the loch, we joined naturalist and author Richard Nairn, whom you might have heard speaking about nature restoration elsewhere on this podcast. Field recording is tricky work, with variables from the drift of the boat and the run of the tide. Out in the middle of the loch, where the channel is dredged for shipping, the water was nearly silent, apart from the distant hum of other boats.
So if we go the same distance again down, we'll be into sort of shallows down here, and it's a bit more tricky. Uh-huh. Certainly too tricky to drift, thanks.
Yeah.
Because you could drift out of the channel very quickly.
Right.
So what I suggest is we just cut the engine and drift back this way.
Okay.
We should go back that way. If we start going into the blue or the green, I'll have to turn on the engine. So I'd have to say...
Okay, so just so you know, it'll take me maybe 30 seconds to pull up mics.
Oh yeah. No, yeah? There's no. It won't be that urgent.
Okay, no, just...
But
just
I'll give you a warning, yeah. You know.
So on the shore, I've been hearing a lot of like clicks and pops and something's calling, and even that's new. Like in Irish waters, I haven't heard a lot of actual calls, what I would call calls. So like maybe, you know, they're like... noise-based tunes, maybe. So that's quite surprising. So I hope maybe I might hear some more of those out here. And some fish sounds so that I can decipher who's here.
We headed back to Carlingford Marina with very little to show for our efforts. A distant call that might have been a porpoise, the churn of propellers on a lifeboat. But while Richard and I tidied up the boat and put on a pot of coffee, Karen had a listen by the marina wall.
I couldn't believe, first of all, that the amount of sound that I was hearing from underneath, especially in these shallow little waters, but also the diversity. So I was expecting, maybe some mussels, some shrimp, maybe some eels, and some then smaller crustaceans, so limpets and things like this. But I heard sounds under there that I've never heard before. Like every time I put the mics in, I was hearing something. And that's remarkable.
You describe everything that you're listening to as sound. You don't attribute it to anything in particular. And I find it quite interesting that you can't see what you're recording. So you almost can't attach a visualization to it in a way that you would in the way that maybe if you heard something that was very familiar. The sounds are, when I listen to them, they're almost alien. And the fact that I really can't attribute them to anything when I hear them means that they are really just sounds. And I wonder what that sort of means for you in your practice, that they are just that and there's nothing else with it. And you're not trying to say this is a certain fish or this is a certain crab. You don't want to make those kind of assumptions and make those kind of associations.
Yeah. Every little bit of knowledge we have has positive and negative uses. And so for me, while I'm searching, and as a composer and as an artist who respects sound for sound's sake and not in the service of something else. And I think particularly as a sound artist, we are a visual people. We go to visuals much quicker than we do to our ears. I also do a lot of work with radio for this reason, because it's the only medium where we prioritize the ear and don't get caught up in having to provide a visual reference for what we're listening to. And really what your question is touching on there is at the bottom of a lot of the creative work that I do, which is creating a very fine line between the comfort of audible recognition of a source or of a place and leaving enough question marks open so that the listener can reassociate or can form their own association or can choose a sonic association that's got nothing to do with source. So by source, I mean the creature. So by not knowing what this creature is, I'm not expecting what it's going to say. It also allows me to make a connection between what we were jokingly calling our soloist and another sound that comes in and encroaches upon it. And so suddenly these two possible creatures are having this sonic conversation, which lets the imagination back in and kind of lets you think about these as not something functional, but as something that can grab our imagination. So a lot of the work that interests me most is in occupying that space and then kind of offering other possibilities of hearing that sound. So for example, that soloist, which you will be hearing on this podcast, that we hear, actually sonically has strong ties to the sound of a bat. I mean, obviously they're not related. They've got no way of being related because they occupy completely different places in the world. But sonically, imagine if they were related. It's not a real question, but it does open up an imaginary space, which, let's face it, is the happy place of the arts. That sort of sense of wonder and of not needing a definitive answer for what we're listening to. Because in some ways, the moment the answer comes, then the puzzle is solved and we can all just move on. Whereas I'm interested in preserving that space just to listen and appreciate.
It disrupts, in a way, the interpretation that we might have of the relations that exist between various parts of our world or creatures that exist within it and what we'd consider to be sort of ecological connections. And I guess that disruption maybe even draws into question our own place within those interrelated systems.
Should I go on to the oyster farms?
Let's go on to the oysters, because I think that was quite exceptional because we could see the oysters physically. There was a real visual element, and I wonder how that affected the experience of recording them. A lot was going on. We walked down, in fact, we went down in a tractor across the foreshore, and the tide was going out rapidly. As it was going out, the oysters were closing up. They were closing up, and they were, every time one closed, they would sort of squelch and a little spout of water would come out.
Yes, we're standing over these trestles of the oysters. And you can see, as you say, you could see all this activity. Like, I mean, if there was a rush hour in oyster farming, I guess that was it, right? So it was like, okay, the tide's going out. Our source of water is disappearing. Quick, quick, quick. Let's get in our last bits. So again, so we lowered the hydrophones, which are the waterproof microphones, down. And we had to get very close because, you know, they're tiny little creatures emitting actually tiny sounds. So my hope was that as a mass, that they might kind of allow us to be able to hear the sounds. Like, I wasn't sure whether we would hear anything much or not. So it was a lovely surprise, particularly when they were spitting out the water. We had a moment where, you know, we were both just kind of, you know, oh, wow, that's amazing. And then kind of the idea of following the creatures. So we would be there for a few minutes, and there'd be a lot of activity. And then we could hear the activity beginning to calm down as the water was getting lower. And then we would have to move to the next place and follow them again. And it really was them leading us in their activity and us kind of just being these unknowing bystanders who were observing, sonically observing their daily activity. It was very special for us to be able to do that. And even just sharing that sound with some of the guys who were with us, who've been working with these creatures their whole lives, but had never heard them. I think in that case where we could see the creatures, it still didn't take from anything for me, because what we were seeing, the action we were seeing and the sonic results of that action still don't make sense to us. It's not like the oyster started talking in a conventional, you know, or the sounds weren't even particularly clicky, which is what one might expect. So when I hear like mussels and stuff beneath this, it's much more of a clicky sound. Whereas this was very luscious. You could hear the juice of the water and these kind of very strange sounds that in some sense were much bigger than the actions. So again, that the imagination was still working overtime with what we were hearing. And in this case, kind of trying to see further. And of course, there were so many of them that you never really knew where the sound was coming from, except somewhere in the middle of this activity. So yeah, it was great.
Back on dry land, Karen met with community members from around Carlingford Loch to listen to her recordings together.
And then we listened to some of the sounds and, oh, it was just, it was a great moment of just seeing the reaction, right? People just going, oh my God, that's down there? Like, how is that alive? Which is exactly the same questions I had when I started hearing some of the stuff down there. I did that in a way where I brought in some extra speakers. And so we kind of spatialized the space to try to represent the loch, right? So just trying to make the point that all of these recordings were made at different points around the loch, both north and south, and that there were all these different sounds happening all of the time. And so that was a special moment at the towards the end of the workshop where we just listened. I just put on all the speakers at the same time. Each speaker had a particular creature that was the priority of that recording. And then they communicated across the space, just like they're doing every day. So even just to try to get people to connect with this idea of life that we can't see, but it's operating at 100% capacity all the time. So even when we're swimming, you know, we're probably passing some of that life, just to make people, I think, aware of that. And that even when you step into a bunch of mussels or something and you hear this crunching sound, that could have been a living mussel. There are many different ways of being in this world. And just because we prioritize one particular way, that doesn't mean that any other way is less important or less essential to our lives and to every other being's life. So I really like that, the opportunity to be able to open up that space and leave it open.
Those little clicks and pops and thumps have kept on going and kept on going. And who knows what else has been going on while we've not been there.
Yeah. And of course, we'll be seasonal. Like the winter sounds, spring sound, you know, the tides, like all of these, there are so many factors that will alter that environment. And of course, us. But even aside from us, the other impacts of climate change will, of course, change the nature of what's happening in the loch, bringing perhaps certain creatures into the loch, maybe pushing other life forms out of the loch. And so the point is that it is a living ecosystem that we're only just beginning to learn about. So it was great to take the time and space to do it in a way that was community-based. It was very important.
Karen used her recordings to create a composition called Hidden Life of Carlingford Loch. It only contains sounds recorded in and beneath the loch, creating space to listen and perhaps discover the tiny creatures simply living in what many of us think as a quiet space. The sounds have been edited and enhanced, but remain largely original for what can be heard if we were to listen very carefully. The intro and outro music for this podcast are from the Mind Orchestra and the Library of Congress Archive. The mysterious transitions are drawn from Karen Power's composition, Hidden Life of Carlingford Loch. You can hear the full piece in the Soundwaves episode in this series, along with conversations on citizen science, rewilding our seas, stories of smuggling and seaweed foraging. Throughout the series, we also gain insights on creative approaches to community-led marine conservation and hold challenging conversations about balancing coastal livelihoods with protecting our seas. To get involved with Shifting Tides and access a wealth of online resources, visit theshiftingtides.org. Shifting Tides is a recipient of the Creative Climate Action Fund, an initiative from the Creative Ireland Programme. It is funded by the Department of Tourism, Culture, Arts, Gaeltacht, Sport and Media in collaboration with the Department of the Taoiseach. The fund supports creative, cultural and artistic projects that build awareness around climate change and empower citizens to make meaningful behavioural transformations. Shifting Tides is a project under the umbrella of the WHEEL and NICFA's iCommunity programme supported by the DFA, the Shared Island Civic Society Fund. iCommunity seeks to support the community and voluntary sector on the island of Ireland, working together on common issues such as community-led climate action. You can find out more at iCommunityHub.org. Thank you for listening.